Welcome to episode 83 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. If you've been following my activities over this past week or so, you'll know that I've been looking into purchasing some new video equipment, because I've got plans in mind for bringing you much more increased behind-the-scenes content from photo shoots, mini features and more. Now, specifically, I've been thinking about taking up a really great offer to purchase a Nikon D7000, which at this time looks pretty much ideal for my needs. This topic is something which came up in conversation with photographer and writer Hugh Graham, who many of you will know was one of my lecturers when I studied photography at university. And off the back of that conversation, we got chatting about photographic technology in general and why very often there really is a very good case for not purchasing the very latest model of kit available. Now, rather than keeping that recording for a rainy day, I've decided to bring it to you this week. So, welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 83. So, once again, I am with Hugh Graham, my one-time lecturer and colleague, and we are sat down with a cup of tea in hand for another lively debate, because I know you all really enjoy them. So, today, the centre of what we're talking about is this idea that you don't need to use the latest up-to-date equipment to get the results that you're wanting. And we're going to open up with a little anecdote that Hugh recounted to me this morning about a local exhibition he went to.
Yeah, it was in the public library, and the exhibition was divided between paintings, watercolours and canvases, and photographs. And I was overcome with mirth, because I was watching the people looking at the photographs and looking at the paintings. And I said, it was quite strange, because the people looking at the paintings were talking amongst themselves and saying, I find that the light and shadow that he's chosen is wonderful. I like his viewpoint. I like the way that he's put the branch over the top of the picture to frame it. No one actually was mentioning the type of paint that was using, the type of canvas, or whether he achieved his superb results by using a particular brush.
Mm.
The whole thing was all they were doing was discussing the perspective, the pictorial content, and what the impact had on the person looking at the picture.
Mm.
Over on the photographic side, there were a group of photographers debating whether the D100 was better than the D200 or the D3, whatever it is, or the Canon A1 was better than this, or how much better it would have been if they'd used such and such a lens. And I wonder what would have happened if they used it exposed at ISO 200 or 400. See, all this bollocks was going on, and no one was paying any attention to the picture.
Mm.
The artists were only concerned with the visual impact on the people looking at the picture. The photographers were only concerned on the tools that they were using in order to achieve a result which apparently interested nobody. So I was the only one, as far as I could see, looking at the pictures and enjoying the pictures.
And this is something that is, you know, it's an age-old debate, and the marketing companies have their own beliefs, and us professionals that do it day in, day out have our own beliefs. One of the angles that I'm coming from this from is some of you that have spoken to me in recent weeks on Twitter and Facebook will know that I am looking to shoot more video, behind the scenes and little feature videos to explain stuff and what have you. But I don't feel there's a necessity for me to go and spend £2,500, say, on a D800, and I'm a Nikon guy. I certainly don't need to be spending out $5,500 on a D4 just for that. So I'm actually looking at what must now be a year and a half, maybe 2 years old, D7000, which at the time, and I'll link to a previous episode where I was actually speaking to the guys at Nikon when we were at Focus on Imaging, talking about this new release at the time, the D7000. It does everything that I could want, and it would be better than the handheld video device that I've got at the moment. But given the current prices, I can get a very nice example for probably, with all the accessories and what have you, for about £700 or £800. Now, I know which option I'd rather go for the sake of just getting slightly better quality for these behind the scenes things, which are not feature length movies. But there's another point that Hugh and I were talking about before we started recording here, is that the D7000 is a DX format camera. It's not full frame. Two of my favourite lenses in the world, and I know we've spoken about this before, is a 50mm 1.8 and a 35mm 1.4 Nikon, neither of which are particularly high value. They're not the top of the line lenses, but they are razor sharp, and they will work perfectly on that slightly old D7000. And Hugh, of course, you're a Canon shooter. There are similarities down the Canon line as well.
Yeah. If you want to make movies, then if you buy the Canon 5D Mark II, which has now been replaced by the Canon Mark D 5D Mark III, why anybody would want to buy the Mark III is a mystery to me, since the 5D Mark II does everything it needs to do perfectly well. But I said the conclusion I came to a long time ago, Charles, is that photographers are frustrated artists, and that if we could actually paint, we would do so rather than take pictures. And taking pictures with a camera is second best. And in the process, we've become equipment freaks. And if I were to be truthful, and if I was certain that my wife could not overhear what I was going to say, I would admit that I have wasted thousands in the last 40 years buying equipment that I didn't need, subsequently found I didn't want, and a lot of it was lying in my camera bag or on my unused equipment shelf for years. Sometimes I will look at it and think, I really don't need that, so why don't I sell it? But I couldn't be bothered to sell it.
Couldn't be bothered, or was somehow attached because you thought maybe you'd use it again someday?
Oh yeah, I mean, photographers deceive themselves that they might actually use it one day. And I think that one of my heroes is Henri Cartier-Bresson, and I know he used a Leica, and I know he used obviously the Leica is a full frame, and he used a 50mm lens, and that's all he used.
And when we say full frame, of course, this was a film camera, so it was full frame because there wasn't a different system. That was, well, there were different formats, of course, but it was, you know, the eye to the world, quite literally, because the ratio of the focal length was similar.
Roughly speaking, what the human eye sees.
Yeah.
And this is why the lens was so valuable. And this is why I think Bresson's pictures are so beautiful. But he didn't need anything else, and he didn't complicate it with anything else. He used one camera, because after all, he only shot in black and white. He used one lens, one 50mm lens, and he only used available light. So he walked out with a very simple camera and a single lens, and he got the pictures which have been admired by photographers all over the world. And I often used to think that if people get into photography and they really want to learn how to get the best out of their camera, they want to fit it up with the equivalent of a 50mm lens. So that would be a crop factor of 1.6 on Canons. So you use a 28 or a 35.
Which is similar on the Nikon, on the DX.
And you would force yourself to only use that lens for a year. And if you did, your photography would improve no end, and you stop worrying about kit.
Yeah. It's what a lot of people listening will know of a chap called Chris Packham, who is kind of a local boy in some regard down our way. He's originally from Southampton on the south coast of the UK, known for his wildlife photography, but perhaps more so for his wildlife television presenting. And he, and I know I've linked to this in the past, he he had a TV show back in the 90s called Chris Packham's Wild Shots. And it was all about how to photograph wildlife in your back garden, and, you know, if you go to the zoo, how to get creative pictures. And he did say that, you know, yes, I've got this equipment, but you don't need all of this. And he referred to, and this will sound familiar to a lot of listeners, he referred to things like filters as photographic jewellery, which by his own admission also, he bought years ago. They sat in his cupboard and never got used, because at the time when he was learning or what have you, he thought he needed to invest in this latest accessory or what have you. So a lot of people are going to be listening to this who are keen enthusiasts, maybe looking to make the jump into
and got possibly a full set of Kokin filters.
Quite right.
Which they never ever use.
So how do people deal with, you know, as you said, there is this whole kind of, especially, not exclusively, but you know, there is that thing within camera clubs. There is a sort of one-upmanship and who's got the latest and greatest. How do people justify to themselves, you know, they will have seen all the adverts in the magazines and special offers and what have you, very, very tempting to go for the latest or the almost latest, with a view that it's going to make your pictures better or make you a better photographer or what have you. How do we advise people? How should they go about it if they haven't got the budget for the latest, but they feel that there is something lacking in their approach to taking their pictures? How do they get around that?
It's not an easy question to answer. And if it had been, you wouldn't have asked it. But I guess the people who are involved in this constant search for technological perfection are obviously people with very little faith in their own ability. And they think that by buying the latest all-singing, all-dancing, bell-whistling wonder, their photography will suddenly be transformed. I can remember there was a chap who ran a used Leica establishment in Hove called Derek Grossman. And he was a Leica fanatic, and he had every known Leica that was ever bought, and he had a wonderful collection. And he used to tell me pictures about people, and he used to tell me stories about people who would come into his shop having invested something like 4,000 quid, which 20 years ago was a huge amount of money, in buying the latest Leica M3 or M4 system with F2 submicron 35mm lenses and so on and so forth. And all they did was shoot lens testing charts.
Yeah.
And they would come in and they were showing, say, look at this, this is resolving it so much per whatever it was. And Derek said, they're my pension. He said, these people, he said, they're lovely men and women. He said they can afford to indulge their fantasies. But he said, I've never, ever seen a picture shot by one of these people. So he said, it's very sad. He said, not only have I got Leica people doing this, I've got Hasselblad people doing this. He said, I've got people, he said, who go from Leica to Hasselblad, then sending all the Leica stuff, and after 2 years with Hasselblad, then sell all the Hasselblad stuff and buy the new range of Leica equipment. He said, I think most men are gadget barmy, and I think this is part of photography, that there's this personal self-deception that if you buy the latest all-thinging, all-dancing lens, body, or whatever it is, suddenly your photography is going to get transformed. Do you think, for example, that if you were to put Bresson out in the field now with a digital camera, the pictures would be no good?
No, of course not.
Do you think, I think you give any really good photographer, like, and when you look at what Ansel Adams produced, which was extraordinary, wasn't it? And I mean, he was working with things that you needed bloody nearly a Pantechnicon to lug around.
Yeah.
And He made his own plates.
Yeah.
He actually
in the field as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So I said, so I believe that if you really want to improve your photography, then you want to restrict yourself to one body, one lens, and you want to spend most of your time, your free time, going to decent exhibitions of paintings and photographs and looking at the images shot by people who have spent years and years perfecting their technique.
And every major city in the world has got a gallery or an exhibition space. We're very lucky here from where we're sat talking. London is on the train from Chichester, for example, is about an hour and 40.
Yeah.
And you get straight up to there and you've got all the big galleries and National Portrait Gallery, some amazing. And as you highlighted right at the start there, a lot of photographers and a lot of creatives as well within certain industries, I think they only look at imagery or content of whatever nature from within their own specialism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, it's something I've probably mentioned before, is that when I'm looking for some inspiration ahead of a shoot or just some ideas, I've got bookshelf full of photography books and some art books and what have you. With the photography, for example, 99% of the time, without exaggeration, I will always pick up a book that shows photography from anywhere between the 1920s to the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that's come out of the mid-90s or the early 2000s for me, or the 80s, doesn't hit, it doesn't inspire me.
So you'll be looking at images that are monochrome then?
Absolutely.
Nearly always.
So, yeah, so you're taking the colour element out and you're concentrating on the form, the light, what have you.
And texture.
Absolutely. But why do so many photographers not think, oh, I'll go to the V&A, what have you, and go and look at some artwork, or go to a gallery and look at some sculpture or what have you, because they think it's irrelevant. And actually, you might be pleasantly surprised.
Well, I would advise anybody to go to the military museum and have a look at the pictures shot by Roger Fenton in the Crimea.
Yeah.
And he actually took some pictures just after the charge of the Light Brigade had been done.
Yeah.
And you can see the valley was full of cannonballs.
What looked like pumpkin field, doesn't it?
That's right.
But there's another thing, just getting back to this topic, is that I know that you have recently bought a new lens to have a play with, and it didn't break the bank, and B, it's not cutting edge. But there is this, I always like to get across to people that are looking up to professional photographers for inspiration or guidance or what have you. There is this assumption that if you're a professional, you must be using the latest cameras and lenses. Every year it's upgraded. When was the last time you upgraded your camera or changed your camera, your standard day-to-day bodies?
I had bought a camera, a Canon 1DS, and I loathed it. And I'd spent £2,500 on this, and it didn't focus properly. The auto exposure mechanism was crap. I'm not sure. There was a huge debate in the photographic press about it. I couldn't get the autofocusing to work properly. The auto exposure was less than wonderful. Canon said this was a faulty batch. I suppose that may have been true.
But you've already parted at that point with £2,500.
Yes, but so I went back to the chap I bought it from and said, I don't like it. Anyway, so I sold it. And I bought 3 40Ds for the same money. And I'm still using them. It's a 10.2 megapixel camera. It takes pictures that I can blow up to 5 foot by 6 foot without any problems at all.
And this was how many years ago?
4 or 5 years ago.
So, same for me. I haven't upgraded cameras probably for about 3 years or 2 years, maybe. Part of my looking at the D7000 is that, as well as shooting the video, it would make a very nice second body, which a lot of professionals use that camera as a second body because it's reasonable, it has the resolution and the quality that you'd expect. But you have just bought a new old lens, if that makes sense, for the...
It's 20 years old.
20 years old for the princely sum of £66?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's... You are saying it's lovely and sharp. It's not an L lens. No. It's not...
It's one of the early... It's one of the early F4, constant F4, constant aperture, 70 to 210 zooms.
Mm.
It's got a macro facility, providing you're shooting, you don't shoot wide open at F4.
Mm.
You get pictures that are razor sharp at 5.6 or 6.3.
Mm.
And I think, I suppose that is really what the message is.
Mm.
If you are struggling with a budget, there's no need to struggle. Go and buy, for example, a 28mm 2.8
mm-hmm.
and use it at f4 or 5.6 and you'll not see any difference in the pictures that you'll spend that you will shoot on a 28 f1.8
mm.
which will cost you £400 or £500 more.
And I was talking to someone the other day saying, and they were telling me there's a company, I forget the name now, who makes adapter rings for
EF.
So for the old Canon lenses?
For FD to EF.
Yeah. Now, I know another chap who shoots a lot of track day motor car stuff, and he shoots on Canon, and he was looking for a new lens, and he went and bought something like a 15-year-old lens, and older as well, because a lot of film guys, i.e. moving image guys, that they're shooting on manual focus anyway, and if you don't need all of the electrical contacts that come with these, you know, that you don't get with the older lenses that go through an adapter ring, it doesn't matter. So you can pick up real bargains that actually anyone looking to get into photography, they could build their starter kit for £150.
Oh yes, easily.
£200 maybe.
Furthermore, the guy that I think you're probably talking about is a chap called the Lens Doctor.
Could well be. Yeah.
And you can actually check him up on the website.
Mm.
And he produces this adapter, which converts most of the facilities of the old FD of the old Canon FD lenses to the EF,
mm.
which means that you can get auto exposure, but you can't get autofocus.
Mm.
But what you can get is manual focus with the indicator in the viewfinder.
Oh, right, okay.
Now, you can also do this click-stop free.
Hmm.
So you can actually use it for video without any problems at all.
Oh, right.
So it's really clever.
Or you... This is what you would say in my position. Or you could shoot on Nikon and then you wouldn't have to worry about that because their lenses are interchangeable going back 70-odd years.
Yeah, well, if you want to live and work with a system that's old, I suppose you
can. and that's exactly it, isn't it? I mean, we're joking about sort of, you know, using an old system, what have you, but at the end of the day, you know, we're shooting sort of day to day and we're not using the very latest kit. We don't feel a pressure to use the latest kit. There might be a bit of sort of jeering among colleagues that at an event saying, oh, are you still on that old thing? For example, my Nikon D2H, which is a beast, the camera that, as a colleague once told me, even Nikon didn't like. But, you know, it's not worth much now. But I would never get rid of it because I like it. I don't use it a lot. But there are situations where I could still use it.
This is going to be one of those things at the bottom of your camera bag, is it? And you're going to just rediscover it in 10 years' time and think, I wonder why
it's a modern day classic.
I wonder why I didn't sell that.
It's one of the best paperweights I've ever bought. But yeah, I mean, it is exactly that. So... you know, I think we can probably round it up there because...
Before we get out, I'm going to lean into the next thing that we'll talk about at some other time.
Okay.
Why you don't need to use Photoshop.
Okay.
Why this is a dreadful program and anybody ought to be using a Mac and using Aperture 3.
There we go. A sweeping statement
to end. Hang on. How much does Aperture 3 cost if you've got a Mac? It costs £23.
Hmm.
And if you've got a Mac, and the difference between a Mac, well, the Mac I use is a Mac Mini.
Mm.
And I said, you can pick them up for £400.
And I suppose now that you've dragged us into the debate of software, again, I don't use the latest Photoshop program. I use CS4, but I run all my images through RAW Converter. I put them into Bridge, put them through RAW Converter, and any finer detail adjustments I need to do, which, as listeners will know, I don't do a lot of post-production, I do that in CS4. My clients aren't complaining. They're not looking at that saying, do you know what? I reckon that was not done on the latest version of Photoshop. It does not matter. At the end of the day, the clients are happy with the pictures, I'm happy with the results, and that's what should matter.
I think, Giles, if you go and watch a wheelwright, he has invested money in chisels of the best possible carbon steel. He keeps them absolutely to perfection with a razor sharp edge. And he, those chisels, he will buy top quality kit, and they will last him the work of a lifetime.
Mm. Yeah.
And I can't see any difference. So if you're going to buy a photographic tool, we'll call that a lens,
mm-hmm.
then you buy top quality piece of glass. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how old it is.
Within your budget,
yeah,
I should probably say.
And look after it. And it'll still be doing proper service for you 30 years' time. You don't need to have the latest All Singing, All Dancing Wonder.
And on that note, we'll leave it there. Hugh, thank you once again for your time. And I look forward to our next debate where we get into the throes of Photoshop or not. So, yeah, thanks again. I've pretty much made up my mind about the D7000 now, but of course I'm still keen to hear your thoughts. Also, do you agree with what Hugh and I said? Yes? No? Just let me know. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter, at Giles Babbage. There's the Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or, of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I'll speak to you all very soon.
Member of the CurrentPhotographer.com podcast network. Find more great photography shows at CurrentPhotographer.com/podcast. CurrentPhotographer.com.